will be teaching us. And so he will be taking us through the Confession of Faith on chapter 9 as we consider the topic of free will. So I'll hand it over to Mickey, and he'll be with us this morning. Excuse me.
All right. Just to let you know, I am here of my own free will. So, you can't blame Connor. Talk about free will. Free will is often, there's a lot of dispute even in Christian churches over what it means for us to have free will, and especially in light of God's sovereignty, how do those two work together. Chapter 9 doesn't really address God's sovereignty, but it does give us a lot of information about free will and how it works. The first paragraph, God has endued the will of man with that natural liberty that is neither forced nor by any absolute necessity of nature determined to good or evil. Basically what they're saying is that we have liberty to make free choices, and there is nothing that forces us against our will to make a choice that we don't want to make. Often in pagan cultures, they speak of fate, and they have a type of fatalism where we don't have free will, but fate determines our choices. And the Bible tells us that that's not the case, that we do have free will. We do make the choices that we want to make according to our desires. In Deuteronomy 30:19, we're told to choose life, indicating, yes, we do have a choice. We can make a choice, and we're not fated to do something against our will. Section 2. Man in his state of innocency had freedom and power to will and to do that which was good and well-pleasing to God, but yet mutably, so that he might fall from it. That phrase, yet mutably, I think is very important. Adam and Eve had the ability to do good. They had the ability to obey God. They also had the ability to sin and to fall. Pardon?
I'm sorry. I forgot what I was going to say. Mutably. It means if
you
can change.
Right. Okay. Right. And of course, that's what happened in the fall. Their wills changed, and they no longer had the ability to do good as it pertains to our salvation, but they still had the ability to do evil. Augustine of Hippo said that before the fall, we had the ability to sin and the ability not to sin. After the fall, we continued to have the ability to sin, but lost the ability not to sin. Genesis 2:16 and 17 and 3:6. I want to emphasize 3:6. So when the woman saw that the tree was good for food and that it was a delight to the eyes and that the tree was to be desired to make one wise, she took of its fruit and ate, and she also gave some to her husband who was with her, and he ate. I think the key there is that it was to be desired. She had been told not to eat of that tree. Adam and Eve were in a perfect environment. They were created perfect. They did not have a sin nature. The mystery is, where did this desire to sin come from? The Bible doesn't tell us. But we see here that she saw that the fruit was desirable. What's the 10th commandment? You shall not covet. And I think what we see here is a picture of Eve coveting even before she took of the fruit. How that happened, we don't know. She wasn't exposed to sinful people. She wasn't exposed to anything. And Adam obviously was also coveting because he was there with her and he didn't do anything to stop her. This is a mystery, but because of what they did, we, as part of God's covenant, are in the same state now, that we desire evil. As converted, regenerate people, we also have a desire to please God. And that those two desires are often in conflict. Man, by his fall into a state of sin, hath wholly lost all ability of will to any spiritual good accompanying salvation. So as a natural man, being altogether averse from good and dead to sin, and dead in sin, is not able by his own strength to convert himself or to prepare himself thereunto. We can do what I would call civic good. We can obey the traffic laws, we can be good to our neighbors, but we cannot do anything good that will save us from the state that we're in. Atheists can obey the traffic laws and do civic good, but that doesn't gain us anything with God. So we have the ability, someone who is not regenerate has the ability to do good, but often our choices, rather than glorifying God, are glorifying ourselves, and that is our natural state. Romans 3, no one seeks for God, all have turned aside, together they have become worthless, no one does good, not even one. John 6, 44 and 65, no one can come to me unless the Father who sent me draws him, and I will raise him up on the last day. And he said, this is why I have told you that no one can come to me unless it is granted him by the Father. So we have lost the ability to please God. We've lost the ability to come to God in our fallen state. We only have that ability once we are regenerated and God has given us new desires and a new will to please him. Jonathan Edwards said that we are free to choose that which we most desire at the moment due to our sin nature after the fall. Our desire is to rebel and disobey God. That has helped me a lot. Anytime I am going to make a choice, whatever choice I make, it's always in accordance with my greatest desire at that moment. Now, my desires change. Sometimes I have new information that I lacked before, so my desires change. Just getting older, my desires change. I don't have the same desires now that I had when I was a teenager. But it's important to note that when I make a choice, it's in accordance with my greatest desire at that moment. Now, my desires can be either positive or negative. Sometimes I make a choice because I feel like I lack something and I'm making a choice to gain something. Other times, I'm making a choice to avoid something, to avoid some kind of consequence. If I see, for example, an expensive lens for my camera that I really, really, really need, I have a choice. I can follow that desire, or maybe I have the desire to avoid the wrath of my wife. And so then I won't buy that lens. But that's an example. Sometimes my choices are positive. I want to gain something that I didn't have. Sometimes my choices are negative. I'm trying to avoid a certain consequence. But in either case, the greatest desire at that moment wins out, and that's how I choose.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're all born with a sin nature. And we see that even in babies, particularly as they get older, even before they learn to walk. You can sometimes see a rebellious nature in them. But this is hard to... It's hard to deal with sometimes. I mean, it gets into the whole question, what happens when infants die? Where do they go? Our confession says that elect infants go to be with God. They don't talk about what are elect infants, and then different reformers, different Christians have come up with different ideas of how that comes about. But what we do know is that only those who are elect go to be with God. So yes, elect infants do go to be with God when they die, but does that mean that there are unelect? The confession doesn't say, but my hope and desire is that all infants go to be with God when they die, but I can't say for sure. I do know that all infants do have a sin nature when they're born. Ephesians 2, 1 through 5, and you were dead in the trespasses and sins in which you once walked, following the course of the world, following the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that is now at work in the sons of disobedience, among whom we all once lived in the passions of our flesh, carrying out the desires of the body and the mind, and were by nature children of wrath, like the rest of mankind. But God, being rich in mercy because of his great love with which he loved us, even when we were dead in our trespasses, made us alive together with Christ. By grace, you have been saved. Here in Ephesians, Paul talks about us carrying out the passions of our flesh and then the desires of our body and our mind. Again, every decision we make is in accordance with our greatest desire at that moment. Section 4. When God converts a sinner and translates him into the state of grace, he frees him from his natural bondage under sin, and by his grace alone enables him freely to will and to do that which is spiritually good. Yet so that by reason of his remaining corruption, he does not perfectly nor only will that which is good, but does also will that which is evil. Again, this talks about the battle that we enter into when once we're saved and made regenerate. I've heard more than once someone saying, you know, before I was a Christian, I didn't have this problem. I just did what I wanted. But now that I'm a Christian, I'm in constant conflict. My desires are in constant conflict with each other. When I sin, it's because my desire to sin was greater than my desire to please God at that moment. When my actions glorify God, it's because my desire to please God was greater than my desire to sin at that moment. The person who is unregenerate does not have a desire to please God or to glorify God. So they don't have that battle that we enter into once we are saved, and that battle continues for the rest of our life. We grow in grace. We grow to become more and more conformed to Christ, but that battle never ends. It continues for the rest of our life. It's only once we are in our glorified state with God that we no longer have the ability to sin and now only have the ability to please God. Jesus answered them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who practices sin is a slave to sin. So if the Son sets you free, you will be free indeed." Paul, in his letters, very often starts off by introducing himself as a slave of Christ. He also talks about us as being slaves to sin or slaves to righteousness. I think the point here is that we serve either God or we serve ourselves. And again, as I said, once we're regenerate, that battle goes on. But to say that I am totally free in a libertarian sense, that I am equally free to choose either good or evil, the Bible doesn't say that that's the case. It says I'm either a slave to sin or I'm a slave to righteousness. And I serve God or I serve myself and Satan, but I am not totally free in a libertarian sense to make any choice I want. My choices are not equal. If they were, I don't know that I would actually be able to make a choice. If my choices were A or B were equal, I probably wouldn't be able to choose. The fact that I do choose, for whatever reason, even if I can't voice it, is evidence that I had a desire for that choice. Even small things we do, like where you're sitting today, when you came in here, you made a choice to sit where you are. Why? I don't know. Maybe someone is sitting in the spot where you normally sit and you didn't want to conflict with them, so you chose to sit someplace else. Maybe this is the spot where you normally sit, but whatever the desire was, there was a desire to make that choice to sit where you are. And we do that throughout our lives. We're constantly choosing in accordance with whatever our greatest desire was at that moment, regardless of how big or small the choice was. Romans 7:15. 18 through 19 and 21 and 23, for I do not understand my own actions, for I do not do what I want, but I do the very thing I hate, for I know that nothing good dwells in me, that is, in my flesh, for I have the desire to do what is right, but not the ability to carry it out. For I do not do the good I want, but the evil I do not want is what I keep on doing. So I find it to be a law that when I want to do right, evil lies close at hand. But I see in my members another law waging war against the law of my mind and making me captive to the law of sin that dwells in my members. Paul's describing the battle that we all go through. We all, as regenerate Christians, we all desire to please God, but there's that constant battle going on. Sometimes I choose what is pleasing to God, and sometimes I don't. But again, I'm responsible for my choices. I do have a sin nature, but I'm responsible for my choices. Joseph told his brothers, you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. They did what they willed to do. They did what they wanted to do. The Bible talks about Pharaoh, how God hardened his heart and wouldn't let the children of Israel go, but Pharaoh did what he wanted to do. He chose willingly. I can't lay the blame at fate. I can't lay the blame at someone else. My choices are willing choices. I choose according to my desires. So. Section 5. The will of man is made perfectly and immutably free to good alone, in the state of glory only. So this is what I mentioned before. I love the way they wrote these chapters. Not only is there a logical order to the arrangement of the chapters, but there's a logical order as you go through each chapter, and they end here with we are made perfectly and immutably free to good alone in that state of glory alone. So we have freedom now to choose to either obey or disobey, but once we're in glory, we will have the ability to do good alone. And I don't know about you, but sometimes I can't wait for that to happen. it's definitely a hope that in the end, God will prevail. And in the end, I will be in a state where I can please God and I will not be able to sin. Any questions or comments? Go ahead. I have friends on Facebook that are atheists, and their definition of good is basically whatever is pleasurable and doesn't cause harm to someone else. And I'm constantly telling them, well, that's pretty subjective. What I consider to be good, someone else might consider to be not good. You know, then how do we decide who's right? But they stick with that, you know. I'm not a bad person. As long as I am not harming someone else, what difference does it make what I do? And what they're missing out is that if my actions are not glorifying God, what is the chief end of man? Man's chief end is to glorify God and to enjoy him forever. And even when I do something that I think is good, if it's not for the purpose of glorifying God, if I'm not consciously endeavoring to glorify God, is it really good? You know, people do good things because they want to bring attention to themselves. In that case, what I'm doing is actually evil if I'm not endeavoring to glorify God. Well, anything else?
I just want to thank you for making the notes ahead because we can't write that fast. And I appreciate having something to take home in the notes.
Okay, you're welcome. All right. Thank you.